tested with 260 pending, 71 deaths. Recovered, 3,492. Active, 726. Midland County, 3,272 confirmed, 69 deaths. From the Texas Tribune, COVID-19 hospitalizations, new daily cases, dropped to lowest point since June. 4,144 Texans are in the hospital for the coronavirus as of September 1st, 763 less than a week ago. They occupy 7.6% of hospital beds. 4,116 new cases were reported on September 1st. The latest positivity rate is 10.1%. 12,681 Texans have died as of September 1st, 145 more deaths reported than the day before, and 1,105 more than a week ago. Now here are coronavirus briefs. The U.S. continues to lead the world in total coronavirus cases with more than 6 million infections. Iowa has the highest rate of coronavirus cases in the U.S., a White House Coronavirus Task Force report sent to state officials warned. A National Institutes of Health panel says doctors should not treat convalescent plasma as a standard of care for COVID-19 until more studies have been done. Citing fears that increased homelessness could exacerbate the coronavirus crisis, the Trump administration on Tuesday issued a ban on evictions for the next 4 months. But housing experts say the policy doesn't go far enough, since it doesn't provide any aid for renters who will eventually owe what may be sky-high past due balances. The Trump administration said it will not join a global effort to develop, manufacture, and equitably distribute a coronavirus vaccine, in part because the World Health Organization is involved. The U.S. coronavirus death toll has surpassed 181,000 and more than 6 million cases have been reported. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin testified before Congress on Tuesday that a new stimulus package is still needed, but talks with Democrats after the hearing went nowhere. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is facing criticism for visiting a hair salon in San Francisco that was closed to the public due to coronavirus restrictions. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio announced he would delay the start of in-person school by nearly 2 weeks after teachers threatened to strike over safety concerns. Now here are longer articles. Common steroids reduce deaths among critically ill COVID-19 patients, new analysis confirms. New research released on Wednesday confirms that common affordable steroids can reduce deaths among critically ill COVID-19 patients. The study, published in the medical journal JAMA, examined several randomized trials involving more than 1,700 patients. Patients who received the steroids were more likely to survive, and there was no suggestion of an increased risk of serious adverse events among those who received the drugs. Among 678 patients treated with steroids, 32.7% died. Among 1,025 patients who received the usual care or a placebo, 41.5% died. The bottom line is that these are the sickest patients who are being treated with corticosteroids in these trials, and mortality is very high. It's about 40% in the absence of treatment with corticosteroids, said Jonathan A.C. Stern of the University of Bristol, an author of one of the papers published Wednesday. The treatment with corticosteroids reduces mortality of 40% to 32%. That's a 20% relative reduction, or if you like to have a better way to think about it, an easier way to think about it, is that out of every 100 patients treated with corticosteroids, 8 additional patients do not die. These results suggest steroids should be part of standard care for critically ill COVID-19 patients, the study says. COVID-19 cases in U.S. children have increased 17% over 2 weeks, report says. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic through August 27th, there have been more than 476,000 cases in children, according to an updated report published by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Children's Hospital Association. The report looks at publicly reported data from 49 states, New York City, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and Guam. Children represented 9.5% of all cases, and there is an overall rate of 631 cases per 100,000 children in the population. Both of these numbers have increased since the previous report on August 20th, when children represented 9.3% of all cases, and the overall rate was 583 cases per 100,000 children in the population. There were 70,330 new child cases reported since August 13th. That's a 17% increase in child cases over 2 weeks. Of the nine states that reported testing, children make up between 4 and 13.3% of all tests. Between 2.8 and 17.4% of tested children were positive for COVID-19. At this time, it appears that severe illness due to COVID-19 is rare among children, the report says. However, states should continue to provide detailed reports on COVID-19 cases, testing, hospitalizations, and mortality by age, so that the effects of COVID-19 on children's health can be documented and monitored. It's the worst thing you could do, Fauci says of sending infected children home from college campuses. College students infected with the novel coronavirus should stay on campus and isolate there as opposed to returning home, according to Dr. Anthony Fauci. A return to campus for the new academic year has colleges and universities struggling to both contain outbreaks of COVID-19 and enforce policies meant to prevent its spread. Keep them at the university in a place that's sequestered enough from the other students, but don't have them go home because they could be spreading it in their home state, Fauci said during a pre-recorded interview on NBC's Today Show on Wednesday. Asked if campuses should be shut down when there are infected students to send kids home, Fauci replied, "It's the worst thing you could do." You don't want to be someone who's propagating the outbreak, Fauci warns ahead of Labor Day weekend. Holiday weekends have led to surges in COVID-19 cases, but practicing mitigation measures can help prevent these surges, according to Dr. Anthony Fauci. When you have a holiday like Labor Day, we have seen after the 4th of July, we saw after Memorial Day, a surge in cases, Fauci said during a pre-recorded interview on NBC's Today Show on Wednesday. Wear a mask, keep social distancing, avoid crowds. You can avoid those kinds of surges. You don't want to be someone who's propagating the outbreak. You want to be a part of the solution, not part of the problem, Fauci said. Coronavirus symptoms can last much longer than initially thought, experts say. Months into the pandemic that has infected more than 6 million Americans, the public and experts alike are learning the impacts of COVID-19 can drag on longer than expected. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention advises that most Americans who have tested positive for coronavirus can return to work or school 10 days after the onset of symptoms, unless the illness requires hospitalization. But new research suggests that the virus and its symptoms are often nowhere near finished by that benchmark. According to research published Tuesday in the British Medical Journal, patients may need to wait over a month before being retested to know whether they have cleared the virus. The study also suggests that about 1 in 5 negative tests are false negatives, meaning that many are still spreading the virus after testing negative without knowing it. Even once patients do test negative, many report that their symptoms, from aches to loss of smell to brain fog and affected mood, can last months longer. We think that this long-term damage may be in part due to vascular damage, kind of a footprint that the virus leaves even when it's gone from the body, Dr. William Lee told CNN's Chris Cuomo earlier in the week, adding that researchers have seen the virus damaging blood vessels that connect the entire body. The unspoken long-term coronavirus symptoms. It's been almost 5 months since Shelby Hedgecock tested positive for COVID-19, and the former personal trainer said her symptoms are still debilitating. Hedgecock is among patients who call themselves long-haul survivors, those who experience symptoms long after testing positive. And long-term effects like theirs needs to be taken seriously, a doctor researching these symptoms told CNN on Monday night. This is the conversation that needs to be had in the medical and the research community, not just in the sufferers who are actually dealing with it, Dr. William Lee said. COVID-19 can be a prolonged illness, even among young adults without underlying chronic medical conditions, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported in July. About 35% of patients surveyed by the agency said they still weren't back to their usual good health, even 2 to 3 weeks after testing positive for the disease. The rest said they had returned to their usual state of health about 5 to 12 days after a positive test. Hedgecock first tested positive in April, and though she tested negative in May, she is still having neurological issues, cognitive issues, shortness of breath, chest pain, loss of smell, and body aches and pains that send her to bed for days if she participates in even gentle yoga, she told CNN. Hedgecock's experience is not unique, Lee said. His team is trying to connect the symptoms, with data pointing to the virus not just affecting the lungs, but the blood vessels that connect the whole body, the doctor said. We think that this long-term damage may be due in part to vascular damage, kind of a footprint that leaves the virus even when it's gone from the body, Lee said. Now, here are a few short articles related to the vaccines. There's a legitimate way to end coronavirus vaccine trials early, Fauci says. A COVID-19 vaccine could be available earlier than expected if ongoing clinical trials produce overwhelmingly positive results, said Dr. Anthony Fauci. Although two ongoing clinical trials of 30,000 volunteers are expected to conclude by the end of the year, Fauci said an independent board has the authority to end the trials weeks early if interim results are overwhelmingly positive or negative. The Data and Safety Monitoring Board could say, the data is so good right now that you can say it's safe and effective, Fauci said. In that case, researchers would have a moral obligation to end the trial early and make the active vaccine available to everyone in the study, including those who have been given placebos, and accelerate the process to give the vaccine to millions. Fauci's comments come at a time of growing concern about whether political pressure from the Trump administration could influence federal regulators and scientists overseeing the nation's response to the novel coronavirus pandemic and erode shaky public confidence in vaccines. Prominent vaccine experts have said they fear Trump is pushing for an early vaccine approval to help win re-election. Large Icelandic study finds that antibodies last for months in boost to vaccine search. A new large-scale study out of Iceland found that coronavirus antibodies lasted for at least 4 months, a potentially encouraging development for scientists working on a vaccine. Published Tuesday in the New England Journal of Medicine, the study used blood samples from more than 30,000 people. Of those who tested positive for the coronavirus, 487 had received multiple antibody tests, allowing scientists to compare the results over a period of time. In the first 2 months after a patient was diagnosed, the antibodies that can confer immunity rose significantly, they found. For the next 2 months, antibody levels remained stable. In a separate commentary, scientists from Harvard University and the National Institutes of Health noted that the Icelandic study focused on a homogeneous population largely from a single ethnic origin and geographic region, and that results might vary elsewhere. That said, this study provides hope that host immunity to this unpredictable and highly contagious virus may not be fleeting and may be similar to that elicited by most other viral infections, they added. Previous studies had suggested that coronavirus antibodies might be short-lived, leaving people vulnerable to reinfection. The new findings, however, offer hope that a vaccine that triggers an immune response will have a longer-lasting effect than some had previously theorized. The Icelandic researchers also found that women, non-smokers, and older patients had higher levels of antibodies, as did those with more severe cases of COVID-19. Public trust around coronavirus vaccines is dropping quickly, researcher says. Public trust around coronavirus vaccines is dropping quickly, according to Dr. Seema Yasmin, a former CDC disease detective who is tracking this in real time. "I have concerns about how the trials for vaccines are being communicated," she said about her observations from her work on misinformation and disinformation, particularly around vaccines. In a recent interview, Dr. Fauci said a COVID-19 vaccine could be available earlier than expected if ongoing clinical trials produce overwhelmingly positive results. Dr. Yasmin agrees. However, she points out that it will not lead to widespread usage if there is no public trust. What use is that if the American people are like, "Nope, I think you did this too quick. You named it warp speed. That's really terrifying. Did you cut corners? How safe is this really?" she said. "My concern is that dropping credibility in science and scientists in the FDA, which already this year has fast-tracked two emergency use authorizations, and very questionably," she added. Some background. Three COVID-19 vaccine candidates are in large-scale U.S. trials. British drug maker AstraZeneca said Monday it has started phase three trials of its experimental coronavirus vaccine in the U.S., becoming the third company to start late-stage trials of a vaccine to prevent COVID-19. The vaccine, developed in partnership with Oxford University, has the backing of the U.S. federal government. Rivals Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech already have phase three trials underway, also with the federal funding. The World Health Organization cautioned countries Monday against rushing to develop coronavirus vaccines and advised taking great care in granting emergency use authorization, a quicker route to getting a vaccine in wide use than full approval, which can take many months. Sniffer dogs to be trained in Finland amid hopes that they can detect coronavirus at Helsinki Airport. A Finnish group is training sniffer dogs amid hopes that they could help spot travelers infected with the novel coronavirus. I'm going to try carefully to pronounce this name. Evidencia Elaine Lakara Palivlut, a Finnish veterinary clinics network, said it would fund an initial trial program to train 16 dogs with 10 trainers expected to be deployed at Helsinki Airport. "I felt the need to do something," Virpi Perala, a representative for the clinics network, told the Washington Post. Perala said more funding would be needed to scale the project up if it is successful. "We need a lot of dogs, possibly hundreds. The first dogs could be deployed to the airport within weeks," she said. Finland would not be the first country to put hopes in sniffer dogs' capability to spot signs of the coronavirus. Various experiments are underway in the United States and other countries. Some nations have already deployed dogs to curb the spread of the virus. In Dubai, health experts have had sniffer dogs analyze sweat samples of randomly picked air travelers since mid-August. According to researchers, the dogs detected the coronavirus with a 94.5% accuracy. The practice rests on the theory that changes in health, such as getting sick by a virus, affect the way people smell, and that dogs have sensitive enough noses to notice. Research by the University of Helsinki earlier this year found similarly promising indications, even though scientists there have said only large-scale trials can conclusively prove whether the method works. Like in Dubai, the dogs will sniff sweat samples and will not come into contact with travelers. "The infrastructure to support the trial is currently being set up," said Anna Heilm-Bjorkman, a researcher at the University of Helsinki. Travelers who agree to the dog sniff test will swab their own necks to produce a sample for the dog's scrutiny. She added, "The dogs may be better at spotting coronavirus infections than PCR and antibody tests, according to their preliminary research. The dogs can also find individuals that are not yet PCR positive, but will become PCR positive within a week," said Heilm-Bjorkman, referring to pre-symptomatic individuals. Heilm-Bjorkman said the dogs could later also be used in nursing homes and other places. After a first wave of infections in the spring, Finland saw cases plummet during the summer, mostly with either no daily new cases or increases in the single digits. In recent weeks, the country of 5.5 million has seen an uptick in new cases, with daily increases in the low double digits. Now here are a few articles related to the economy. Ford will cut 1,400 salaried jobs and offer early retirement. Ford is looking to cut 1,400 white-collar jobs in a cost-savings move. The automaker sent out letters to employees Wednesday saying that salaried staff eligible for retirement would be getting early retirement offers next week. Those who take the offer by October 23rd would be leaving the company by the end of the year. Our hope is to reach cost-cutting targets with the voluntary incentive program, the letter from Kumar Galhotra, Ford's president of the Americas, said. If that doesn't happen, involuntary separations may be required. The auto industry has been hit hard by the economic downturn associated with the COVID-19 pandemic. Car sales are down significantly as millions of U.S. workers have lost their jobs, and millions more are working from home and not in need of a new car to get to and from work. Ford posted a 50% drop in revenue in the second quarter, and it would have lost $1.9 billion in the period without a paper gain from its investment in Argo Al, a separate company working on self-driving car technology in which Ford and Volkswagen have a joint stake. The company has 30,000 salaried U.S. staff and 56,000 U.S. hourly factory workers. It had 190,000 employees worldwide at the start of the year. It has not had any layoffs of hourly workers this year, unlike rival General Motors, in response to the drop in sales from the COVID-19 pandemic. Ford said its cost-cutting move is part of a five-year, $11 billion restructuring that was first announced 2 years ago. Most of the job cuts from that effort is expected to be focused on less profitable overseas operations. Ford stock was flat Wednesday morning. World's largest movie theater chain will reopen another 140 theaters by Friday. AMC said that 70% of its theaters, or 420 total, will be open by this weekend, including the first AMC theater in San Diego, California. AMC announced Thursday that it will reopen more than 140 theaters this week. This move comes right before the movie Tenet comes out in the U.S. this Labor Day weekend, one of the first big movies to hit theaters since the pandemic began. The Christopher Nolan film had a big international debut last weekend. The film was originally set to open in July, but was delayed because of continued uncertainty. Major theater chains are attempting to reopen during the pandemic, but it's difficult to entice audiences to return to theaters without a new major blockbuster to sell tickets. Some background. AMC first reopened more than 100 theaters in the U.S. on August 20th. AMC CEO Adam Aron said in a statement that the first 2 weekends of operations have exceeded our expectations in terms of guests returning to the movies. Aron added that the company will continue to reopen theaters in a way that is both responsible and welcoming. The world's largest movie theater chain says it expects to make more announcements about additional theater reopenings in California, New Jersey, and other areas of the country in the coming weeks. ADP employment figures disappoint as government report looms. The ADP employment report released today was worse than expected, as just 428,000 jobs were added last month. Economists had predicted 950,000 new jobs in the private payrolls report for August. The report showed that large companies had the strongest job gains, with the leisure and hospitality sector gaining 129,000, the most of any. The spring lockdown decimated the industry as hotels and restaurants shut their doors while flights were grounded. What this means. For those watching these figures as an indicator for Friday's government jobs report, disappointment could be on the horizon. Economists expect 1.4 million jobs to be added to the economy in August, bringing the unemployment rate to 9.8%. It would be the first time since April that the jobless rate is below the peak of the Great Recession. July's job data showed the U.S. labor market's third straight month of solid improvement from the depths of the pandemic. However, millions of Americans who lost their jobs at the beginning of the pandemic remain unemployed. Economists are worried that the tepid recovery in the U.S. job market could run out of steam this fall should coronavirus cases surge again, just as federal stimulus money runs out. The world's top developed economies are all officially in a recession. What happens next is far from certain. Lego receives sales boost from families in lockdown. The pandemic has delivered an unexpected boost to Lego, which saw sales rise by 14% during the first 6 months of 2020 as families on lockdown sought out new forms of indoor entertainment. We saw a very positive development during the coronavirus lockdown when families began playing and building Lego sets together. Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update. This is Thursday, September 3rd, 2020. I'm Michael from the Recording Library of West Texas, and here are some of the articles that we'll be reading in this broadcast. We should be testing people under certain circumstances who are without symptoms, Fauci says. More data needed on how effective convalescent plasma is as COVID-19 treatment, Fauci says. Debate rages over whether FDA should use emergency powers to clear a coronavirus vaccine early. Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine trial should have enough data to know if it works by the end of October, CEO says. Don't fast-track a COVID-19 vaccine. Follow the process, expert warns. As stimulus deadlock continues, Schumer calls GOP proposal emaciated. Fewer than 1 million Americans filed for unemployment for the first time in a month. Overworked and exhausted, warehouse workers brace a frenzied holiday rush. Analysis: with schools opening, Texas enters a critical 2 weeks of the pandemic. Coronavirus remains persistent and somewhat unpredictable. Corticosteroids can be used in COVID-19 treatment, new studies show. We'll bring you those stories and additional stories if time allows. First, let's look at the numbers. From the Odessa American, Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 4,302. Ector County negative, 19,342 out of 23,904 tested, with 260 pending. 72 deaths. Recovered, 3,528. Active, 702. Midland County, 3,299 confirmed, 72 deaths. From the Texas Tribune, Texas reports more than 12,800 total deaths from coronavirus. 4,149 Texans are in the hospital for the coronavirus as of September 2nd. That's 657 less than a week ago. They occupy 7.4% of hospital beds. 4,157 new cases were reported on September 2nd. The latest positivity rate is 9.6%, which is a drop from yesterday. 12,870 Texans have died as of September 2nd, 189 more deaths reported than the day before, and 1,065 more than a week ago. Now here are coronavirus briefs. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is telling state health officials to be ready to distribute a coronavirus vaccine to healthcare workers and other high-priority groups as soon as November 1st, heightening fears that the agency is under pressure to approve a vaccine before Election Day. Some scientists warn that granting emergency authorization to a vaccine before clinical trials are complete could pose safety dangers and inflame anti-vaccination sentiment, but others say that doing so could save thousands of lives. More than 6,073,000 coronavirus infections and 182,000 fatalities have been reported in the United States since February. A Minnesota biker who attended the Sturgis motorcycle rally has died of COVID-19, the first fatality traced to the 10-day event that drew more than 400,000 people to South Dakota. At least 260 cases in 11 states have been linked to the rally. Cheap, widely available steroids reduced the number of deaths in patients with severe cases of COVID-19, according to three newly published clinical trials. After facing criticism for visiting a San Francisco hair salon that was not cleared to reopen, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi maintained that she had been set up. At least 1,320 healthcare workers in Mexico have died after contracting COVID-19, the highest total of any nation, according to a new Amnesty International report. Now I'm going to move on to some short articles. The first set of articles will be medically related to COVID-19, and then we'll bring you some economic articles related to the pandemic. We should be testing people under certain circumstances who are without symptoms, Fauci says. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's recent update to its testing guidelines was clearly open to misinterpretation, and people who have been exposed to COVID-19 over a prolonged period of time should get tested whether they show symptoms or not, Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, told CNN's Jim Sciutto. The CDC last week changed its COVID-19 testing guidelines to say some people without symptoms may not need to be tested, even if they've been in close contact with someone known to have the virus. The CDC has now clarified that sentence in a vacuum, the way it read, gave the impression, which was clearly open to misinterpretation, that means that they're not concerned about community spread and that they're not concerned about testing people who are without symptoms, Fauci said on Thursday. Let's clarify that. Community spread is important. People without symptoms do spread the infection, and we should be testing people under certain circumstances who are without symptoms. No doubt about that, Fauci said. Right now, certainly, if you have an actionable situation where there is an exposure that's prolonged and consistent with someone who is infected, and you are without symptoms, you should get tested. Political pressure to get a COVID-19 vaccine is irrelevant, Pfizer CEO says. Pfizer CEO Dr. Albert Bourla said he understands why people are skeptical about the fast-tracked vaccine timeline, but he wants people to know that he thinks political pressure is irrelevant. Speaking during the International Federation of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers and Associations, IFPMA, briefing on Thursday, Bourla said political pressure is irrelevant because we will never ourselves submit for authorization or approval of any vaccine before we feel that it is safe and effective. I understand they are skeptical, Bourla said, but added, we will not cut corners. At the same briefing, Mech, Sharp, and Domi, MSD, CEO Kenneth Frazier said vaccine confidence is a critical issue. We have seen in the wake of the pandemic that vaccinations for diseases like measles have fallen off, in part because people are worried about the safety of vaccines in general, he said. Frazier thinks at the end of the day, the important thing for us to do is to reinforce to the public our commitment to safety as the number one thing. Yes, companies need to move with urgency, he said, but we will not sacrifice safety under any set of circumstances. Like Bourla, Frazier said Merck will not submit for approval any vaccine candidate before we have a quantum of proof through phase three studies about the safety and efficacy in a large population. Fauci says he would not hesitate to take safe and effective approved vaccine. Following concerns that a coronavirus vaccine could be authorized before late-stage trials are finished, CNN's Jim Sciutto asked Dr. Anthony Fauci if he or his family would be hesitant to take a vaccine once it's approved. Not at all, Jim. I will look at the data, and I would assume, and I'm pretty sure that that's going to be the case, that a vaccine would not be approved for the American public unless it was both indeed safe and effective. And I keep emphasizing, both safe and effective. If that's the case, Jim, I would not hesitate for a moment to take the vaccine, even myself, and recommend it for my family, Fauci said. There are currently three vaccines in phase three trials in the U.S. British drug maker AstraZeneca said Monday it had started phase three trials of its experimental coronavirus vaccine in the United States, becoming the third company to start late-stage trials of a vaccine to prevent COVID-19. The vaccine, developed in partnership with Oxford University, has the backing of the U.S. federal government. Rivals Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech already have phase three trials underway, also with government funding. Debate rages over whether FDA should use emergency powers to clear a coronavirus vaccine early. A fierce debate has erupted over whether the Food and Drug Administration should use its emergency authority to clear a coronavirus vaccine before it is formally approved. A move opponents warn could pose safety dangers and inflame anti-vaccination sentiment, but others say could save thousands of lives by speeding protection from the virus. With concerns growing about the politicization of the FDA amid a botched White House rollout of the agency's emergency authorization of convalescent plasma and sharply criticized comments by FDA Commissioner Stephen Hahn, some scientists and bioethicists are demanding the agency forego use of its emergency authority for a vaccine. They worry its very flexibility, which gives FDA officials broad latitude, could make it easier for the White House to pressure the agency into clearing an unproven vaccine before Election Day, November 3rd. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has told state and local health officials to be ready to distribute a vaccine to healthcare workers and other high-risk groups as early as November 1st, part of an elaborate planning process happening while clinical trials are underway that has spurred anxieties in some quarters. Sanofi and Glaxo start phase 1-2 trials of their coronavirus vaccine. Sanofi Pasteur and GlaxoSmithKline said Thursday they are starting early-stage trials of their experimental coronavirus vaccine, one of several being backed by the U.S. government's Operation Warp Speed. The companies said they were recruiting 440 healthy adults at 11 trial sites to test out the vaccine in a randomized, double-blind, and placebo-controlled trial. Researchers will watch to see if the vaccine is safe and whether it induces an immune response. The companies anticipate first results in early December 2020 to support the initiation of a phase 3 trial in December 2020. If these data are sufficient for licensure application, it is planned to request regulatory approval in the first half of 2021, Glaxo said in a statement. The companies are working together using Sanofi's flu vaccine technology and Glaxo's adjuvant, a compound that boosts the power of a vaccine. In July, the companies won a $2.1 billion commitment from the U.S. federal government. The deal commits them to produce up to 100 million doses of vaccine next year, with an option for 500 million more doses. Several other experimental coronavirus vaccines have started human clinical trials in the U.S., including those made by Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Inovio, Novavax, and Johnson & Johnson. And now we have another article related to the testing of vaccines. Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine trial should have enough data to know if it works by the end of October, CEO says. Now we have another article related to the testing of COVID-19 vaccines. This is from the company that we read about earlier. Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine trial should have enough data to know if it works by the end of October, CEO says. Pfizer Chairman and Chief Executive Officer Dr. Albert Bourla said the ongoing clinical trial for a COVID-19 vaccine has enrolled about 23,000 participants, and some are getting ready for their second dose of the vaccine. Pfizer should be able to have enough events to say if the product works or not by the end of October, Bourla said, speaking on Thursday to the International Federation of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers and Associations. We have already worked on the rest of the file, he said, meaning if the vaccine is effective, we are going to start submitting to the FDA on a rolling base. Bourla said if they are able to determine the vaccine is safe and effective in the October timeframe, the company could submit immediately for approval. Pfizer is in the very advanced stage of the clinical trial, Bourla said, confirming that, as of yesterday, 23,000 patients were enrolled into the study. Pfizer is aiming to enroll 30,000 patients in the Phase 3 trial. And now here's a short article relating to that time frame. Fauci says it's conceivable, but not likely, vaccine will be ready in October. Dr. Anthony Fauci said it's conceivable, but not likely, that there will be a coronavirus vaccine ready by October. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has told public health officials around the U.S. to prepare to distribute a potential coronavirus vaccine as soon as late October. But today, asked about that timeline, Fauci said November or December is more likely. These are all guesstimates, he told CNN's Jim Sciutto. It is conceivable that you could have it by October, though I don't think that's likely, Fauci added. Now here's one more story related to vaccines. Don't fast-track a COVID-19 vaccine. Follow the process, expert warns. A potential coronavirus vaccine should not get an emergency use authorization from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, said Dr. Peter Hotez, the Dean of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine. In a series of social media posts on Wednesday, Hotez listed a dozen reasons why an EUA on a potential COVID-19 vaccine may be a bad idea. We haven't done this before for a vaccine, or at least a major vaccine released to a large segment of the population, he tweeted, adding, it's been used for technicalities, but nothing like this. An emergency use authorization allows the FDA to greenlight unapproved medical products, but this involves substandard reviews and falls short of the lengthy process needed for full approval. How can you justify a substandard or lesser review for something that would be injected in tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of Americans? He asked. I understand EUAs for ventilators or PPE, etc., but not for a widely administered vaccine. Hotez urged federal health agencies to follow that process of a full FDA review. He also argued that the White House's lack of science communication strategy is another reason to follow the standard vaccine development process, saying the operation team has allowed inadequate puzzling interviews and misleading press releases. Now we'll turn to the economy. As stimulus deadlock continues, Schumer calls GOP proposal as emaciated. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, in a letter to his Democratic colleagues, ripped into the forthcoming scaled-back Senate Republican stimulus proposal, underscoring the massive gulf that continues to exist between the parties in the negotiations for a new coronavirus relief package. Republicans may call their proposal skinny, but it would be more appropriate to call it emaciated, Schumer wrote Thursday to his members. Their proposal appears to be completely inadequate and, by every measure, fails to meet the needs of the American people. The letter sets the stage for a partisan battle that will recommence in earnest when senators return from the summer recess period next week. Talks between Schumer, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and top White House officials imploded nearly a month ago and have yet to make any headway in the weeks since. Democrats have pressed for a wide-ranging, multi-trillion-dollar proposal to provide funds for schools, rental assistance for states and localities, health providers, and small businesses. Some context. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, the top GOP negotiators, have rejected the Democratic top line repeatedly and pressed to move to a smaller scale package consisting primarily of areas where at least top line bipartisan agreement exists. Pelosi and Schumer have refused, castigating Republicans for underestimating the scale of the need created by the worst pandemic in a century. The dynamics have led to an increasingly pessimistic view on Capitol Hill that a new relief package, following on the $2.2 trillion CARES Act, is even possible at all. Meadows, in private conversations with Senate Republicans, has repeatedly said he doesn't think a deal is possible with Democrats given their current posture, multiple sources have told CNN. It's tough to go more than a month with literally zero progress, one person involved in the negotiations told CNN. Yet somehow, that's exactly what has happened. The divide carries with it massive ramifications for the weeks ahead as the country continues to grapple with the economic devastation created by the pandemic and the public policy response to it. Lawmakers themselves face the threat of a government shutdown at the end of September if an agreement isn't reached on an all-encompassing funding measure. Fewer than 1 million Americans filed for unemployment for the first time in a month. First-time claims for unemployment benefits fell below 1 million again last week, the Labor Department reported Thursday. This happened before, in early August, before claims reversed course and bounced higher. Another 881,000 Americans filed initial claims for benefits last week on a seasonally adjusted basis. Continued jobless claims, which count people filing for benefits for at least 2 weeks in a row, stood at seasonally adjusted 13.3 million, more than 1 million lower than last week. A wonky aspect in the report. The Labor Department changed its methodology for seasonal adjustments, starting with this report. Usually, seasonal adjustments are designed to smooth the data and make it more easily comparable. But during the pandemic's unprecedented effect on the labor market, they have added some noise to the data. On an adjusted basis, unemployment insurance claims rose to more than 833,000, an increase of about 7,500. Still, the trend is mostly pointing in the right direction. The U.S. jobs market is gradually recovering from the pandemic lockdown shock. That said, millions of people continue to rely on state benefits to make ends meet, while Congress is squabbling about a next round of stimulus. These numbers don't include claims for the government's other pandemic-specific programs, such as the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. The Labor Department will again review its adjustment models at the start of next year. Overworked and exhausted, warehouse workers brace for a frenzied holiday rush. Isaiah Kane has a wrenching decision to make, return to the packed Kohl's warehouse where 15 colleagues have already tested positive for the coronavirus, or give up what could be his only chance at steady pay until next year. The 21-year-old took unpaid leave in early July with his manager's approval after two coworkers fell ill with the virus. But once he was back, they made clear it had to be for good because the holiday shopping season was already here. When COVID started, they basically told us, try to socially distance, which is almost impossible in such close quarters, said Kane, who has worked at the San Bernardino, California warehouse for about a year. They keep sending us messages about positive cases, but at the same time, they are going full speed ahead like nothing is happening. Warehouse workers across the country say they've been under enormous pressure for months, working extended hours to fulfill a crush of pandemic orders. Working conditions, they say, have steadily deteriorated during the crisis, leaving many distribution centers understaffed and ill-equipped to accommodate frequent hand washing and other safety protocols. Now the nation's 1 million warehouse workers are preparing for an unprecedented surge in demand as retailers kick off online holiday sales earlier than ever. Housing industry groups eye potential lawsuits challenging Trump's eviction order. Landlords, home builders, and other housing industry groups are weighing how to respond to the Trump administration's new policy protecting renters from eviction, with some even considering lawsuits and other legal actions challenging the moratorium as soon as it takes effect. The mounting opposition stems from the fact that the federal government has not put aside any new aid to reimburse landlords at a time when their tenants are at risk of falling behind on their rent. Such money probably must come from Capitol Hill, where lawmakers for months have been at odds over another round of coronavirus aid, leaving housing industry advocates fearful about their future finances under the moratorium. And if we have time later this hour, we do have two recorded reports related to the housing industry. Tokyo Olympics organizers say games can proceed without a coronavirus vaccine. Japan's government says it expects to vaccinate the entire country against the coronavirus by the middle of next year. But even if that does not happen, the organizers of the postponed Tokyo 2020 Olympics insist the games can proceed, perhaps with limited spectators. We don't think a vaccine is a prerequisite for holding the Olympics, Toshiro Muto, CEO of Tokyo 2020, said in an interview on Monday. It would still be beneficial if an effective vaccine is developed by next year, and we do hope that will be the case. With just over 10 months before the scheduled opening ceremony on July 24, 2021, Muto said it would be too optimistic to assume that the issue of the coronavirus will be a thing of the past by next summer. While we're going over the economic effects of the pandemic, I don't believe that I read the oil prices for today, so let's do that now. West Texas Intermediate crude is trading at $41.49, down 4 cents. Now here are numbers related to Texas. Nearly 3.4 million Texans have filed for unemployment relief since mid-March. These numbers are coming from the Texas Tribune. Unemployment claims as of August 29th, 3.4 million Texans have filed for unemployment relief since mid-March. Texas's unemployment rate was 8% in July, up from 3.5% in July 2019. Sales tax revenues in August. Texas's sales tax revenues were down 5.6% from August 2019. Now from the Associated Press. Texas Tech Athletics cutting 40 positions, reducing salaries. Texas Tech will eliminate 40 positions from its athletic department and reduce the salary of many remaining employees in the face of an expected $25 million reduction in revenue over the next year as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. The cuts announced by the department Monday night the final day of the fiscal year for the department, are expected to save Texas Tech roughly $4.5 million. Employees with annual salaries of $30,000 or more will see reductions of 3 to 14% in pay, while those making less than that won't have their salaries reduced. Today was an extremely difficult and challenging day, Athletic Director Kirby Hokut said. COVID-19 has had a major financial impact on our athletics department, and it was necessary to make these very difficult decisions. We will continue to support our student athletes and each other as we move forward. And continuing in the economic theme, given time in this broadcast later this hour, we'll bring you a pre-recorded report regarding United Airlines announcing furloughs and layoffs. Let's move to the elections. This is from the Texas Tribune. Texas Supreme Court temporarily blocks Harris County from sending mail-in ballot applications to all its voters. The Texas Supreme Court has temporarily blocked Harris County from sending mail-in ballot applications to all its voters for the November election. The decision Wednesday came in response to a lawsuit filed days ago by Republicans in the state's largest county. Attorney General Ken Paxton has since launched his own legal challenge to the plan. Harris County Clerk Chris Hollins announced last month that the county would send applications to its more than 2.4 million registered voters, an effort to make it easier to participate in the election during the coronavirus pandemic. After being sued by Paxton, Hollins said he would only send applications to voters 65 and older who are eligible to vote by mail under state law, pending the litigation. A spokesperson said Wednesday that those plans haven't changed. In June, ahead of the July primary runoff, Hollins' office sent out roughly 380,000 mail-in ballot applications to voters over 65, a spokesperson said. This time, it will send around 295,000. The Secretary of State and Attorney General have made it clear that they don't want us to proactively send applications to voters. They think making it convenient to apply is a bad thing, Holland said in a statement. We disagree, and fortunately, the law is on our side. The Harris County GOP lawsuit alleges that Hollins is a rogue clerk who is abusing the application to vote by mail process and compromising the integrity of elections in Harris County. The lawsuit was brought by the county party, conservative activist Steve Hotz, and judicial candidate Sharon Hemphill. The uproar over the Harris County plan is the latest front in the battle over mail-in voting during the pandemic in Texas. Democrats and voting rights advocates have been pushing in the courts to allow more people to vote by mail, an option that is limited to those who are 65 and older, cite a disability or illness, are confined in jail but otherwise eligible, or are out of their country during early voting and election day. Our office's top priority is to protect the right to vote during the time of COVID-19 to ensure that Harris County voters can cast their ballots safely, Holland said. Since voting by mail is the safest way to vote, it is my duty to educate voters on who qualifies to vote by mail and make it convenient for qualified voters to apply. Amid the latest legal chapter Wednesday, Democrats called Republicans hypocrites for apparently sending out their own mail-in ballot applications while fighting Harris County's plan in court. Hollins tweeted pictures from a mailer paid for by the Texas GOP that says Donald Trump is counting on you and urges recipients to fill out an attached mail-in ballot application after confirming they are eligible. Much like Trump, Texas Republicans have been exposed as hypocrites to the highest degree, State Democratic Party spokesperson Abby Rahman said in a statement. Voting by mail is safe, secure, and convenient. The state GOP chairman, Alan West, appeared to respond to Hollins' tweet Wednesday afternoon, saying Hollins doesn't know the difference between sending absentee ballot applications to eligible voters and sending ballot applications to ineligible voters, also known as universal mail-in ballots, A Texas GOP spokesperson said the party was sending the applications to people who are known to be eligible for mail voting, like it has been done before. Now we'll move to our pre-recorded reports. From the Texas Standard today, an analysis